The Rutabaga Project was launched in January 2016 to bring nutritious and local food to people in the city of Virginia and the surrounding area. Marlise Riffle is a volunteer for the Rutabaga Project, and she's a board member for the Iron Range Partnership for Sustainability. She's joining us on the phone this morning to tell us about the Rutabaga Project and what it's accomplished these past couple years. Welcome, Marlise.
Thank you so much.
Tell us how the Rutabaga Project was started.
Well, the idea actually was born in 2013. Some of us were talking about needs in the community. There was a little funding available. It was generic in nature. But the Iron Range Partnership for Sustainability had for a long time had a local foods project really focused on getting people to grow and eat more local food. And AEOA, the Arrowhead Economic Opportunity Agency, was focused on the needs of low-income people and food insecurity in Virginia, Minnesota, which was a pretty notable problem. And so we got our heads together and decided that we maybe could each bend our missions a little, that IRPS could focus on food insecurity and the needs of low-income folks, and that AEOA could focus on local healthy food instead of just healthy food. So we applied for some funding, and we were turned down twice. And then on the third try, we were finally funded. So the project kicked off in 2016 in January, even though it had existed on paper for several years before that. Brian Bloom is the coordinator of the Rutabaga Project, and he's housed at AEOA. And the Rutabaga Project has spawned all sorts of other things as it began and as it has continued. So it's been great.
Yeah. What do you mean by food insecurity?
Well, food insecurity is a measure that the U.S. Department of Agriculture uses and it indicates when a household doesn't have enough food to meet their basic needs. So a common way to state it is, do you know where your next meal is coming from? And there are a lot of folks who don't. And so that's kind of a statistical measure that tells you the nature of people's access to food in your community. Mm. So we chose three neighborhoods in Virginia that were lower in income, older housing stock, higher in food insecurity. And for a year, we met with people from those three neighborhoods to say, hey, what's the barrier and what do you need?
I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but how did the Rutabaga Project get named Rutabaga?
Well, Lori Janitopoulos, who was the planning director at AEOA at the time, and I were sitting in a conference room at AEOA trying to figure out a name. And I said, we need something really catchy that people will remember. And I suggested a name like, what's a rutabaga? And I have no idea, except that rutabaga is such a range thing. You know, pasties with rutabaga are real pasties. And I know it has roots here on the range. So I said, let's call it what's a rutabaga. And Lori said, nah, let's do the Rutabaga Project. And she told me later that she thought I was kind of crazy, but it's really, really helped us because people remember the name.
Right.
Yeah. And do they ever argue that it should be rutabaggy?
Yes, absolutely. They do. I would say most of the people that I talk with call it rutabaggy.
I'm not a ranger necessarily. I'm a transplant to Bemidji. What's the deal with rutabagas in the range?
Well, they are a real staple food. They were traditional food for the Finnish immigrants who came here. They were a part of the pasties, which have a Cornish origin from the Cornish miners who came from England. And we met some descendants of a family that owned a rutabaga farm in Melrose. And they told us that their farm supplied all of the range grocery stores with rutabagas.
Huh.
And they were just a very commonly used item. They're nutritious. They're a root vegetable, and so I don't know. They have a history here, and it's amazing. We were at Earthfest that first year in like 2013 or 14, and we had a banner saying the Rutabaga Project, and we asked people to tell us rutabaga stories. And oh my goodness, we heard so many stories about how people love rutabagas mashed with potatoes and how they used to grow rutabagas in their garden and other names for rutabagas. So we think we hit on a name that kind of works.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are talking with Marlise Riffle, and she's a volunteer for the Rutabaga Project. Marlise, you guys have tried a lot of projects in 2 short years. Tell us about the Virginia Market Square Farmers Market.
Okay. We knew Mary McReynolds was a member of the Virginia City Council, and she was looking through some architectural plans for City Center Park and realized that the architects had originally designed a farmer's market there. And she called me up and said, hey, would IRPS run a farmer's market there? And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, I don't know. But we ended up saying yes. She got the mayor to dedicate the spot. And so the farmers market started just slightly before the Rutabaga Project was finally funded. And this will be our 3rd year. We have about 15 vendors hoping to grow that. And had a good market all summer last year. We went all through June, July, August, September, and October.
In terms of your food insecurity, the market did get EBT, right?
It did. And that was the story that is interesting. On a national level, when the USDA went from paper food stamps to EBT cards, consumption or purchases at farmers market with food stamps went almost to zero because farmers markets weren't set up to process EBT cards. And so they've been instituting all sorts of matches and benefits to try to get that purchasing at farmers markets back up so that food stamp users have access to more fresh local produce. And so AEOA applied to be a vendor, and that really is important because individual farmers market vendors, it's very difficult for them to become an AEOA vendor, an EBT vendor. So AEOA applied, and we offered it at the Hibbing Farmers Market and at the Virginia Farmers Market. Last year was the first full year, and next year we'll add the Cook Farmers Market. And I just got the figures from the Virginia Farmers Market, and I'm not sure they're in front of me, but with the EBT expenditures at the Farmers Market and the Market Bucks match and Essentia provided a match, we added $6,189 to our market vendor's income.
Wow. What about the kids? You had a club for kids at the market, too.
Yeah, we did. It was a lot of fun. The University of Minnesota Extension funded the Power of Produce Club, and they provided some funding, and Essentia helped us match that. And the kids could sign up, ages basically 0 up to about, I think it was 14, and they get 2 little tokens each week, 2 little wooden tokens, and each is worth $1. And they stop at the farmer's market, pick up their wooden tokens, and they can buy fruits and veggies. They can't buy anything else, but they can buy fruits and veggies. So I remember one day, Balsam Lake Farms had these bags of tiny little sweet apples off of one of their trees, and the kids were lined up to buy their bag of apples. And then Majestic Muse Farm from Cook had paper cups of pea pods, and the kid, and they were sweet and so good, and the kids were lined up to buy those. It was really fun to see. We had 202 kids participate last year in Virginia.
You guys, besides this, with the Rutabaga Project, you've also been working on a community garden.
We have. Essentia helped us out to start. And we hired Dawn Trexel, who has a master's degree in botany. She lives on a farm, and she helped us get them started. The city of Virginia, we drove around with the mayor, and he offered us properties to use. So we ended up with 5 sites throughout the city of Virginia and about 60 garden plots. Some of those are at Pine Mill Court. Some are downtown. And we actually, the Youth Build Program at AEOA built us raised beds. So at 216 Chestnut Street, we have handicapped accessible gardens. Some of our Rutabaga Project participants told us that they could no longer bend, but they wanted to garden. So we have standing height raised bed gardens and wheelchair height raised bed gardens. And the rest of the gardens are scattered around the community. There's some at the old Bailey Lumber site north of Bailey's Lake. And there are some at the Northside Park And there are some at Pine Mills, some downtown, and some at the youth foyer. Last year was good. We rented or had utilized 70% of the plots.
Well, Marlise, you told me about a project that you're just working with Natural Harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a brand new project under Rutabaga. Tell us about that one.
I will. Well, it hasn't started yet, but one of the top priorities, after the Rutabaga participants met for a year, we had a harvest meal, and they said, okay, these are the six things that you got to do. We got to have this happen in our community. And one of those things was a food kit or meal in a bag kind of thing to promote nutrition and the use of unfamiliar produce. And they wanted recipes and education on how to prepare the stuff. Kind of like a meal kit service like Blue Apron or Locally Crated, which is a Minnesota group. So we tried. We wrote USDA grants. We wrote Aetna grants. We wrote Bush Foundation grants. Really, finally, just we were turned down so many times, we just gave up and said, okay, we got to find a way to do this locally. So instead of having a box with food in it, we're going to have a bag with a pocket in the front, and in the pocket will be a shopping list for a meal, and it will tell you which aisle at Natural Harvest Food Co-op has each of the ingredients and how much to buy. You buy the stuff. Inside the bag are the recipes and cooking instructions for the meal. And all of the food items at Natural Harvest are EBT eligible, so this will be a meal kit that can be purchased with SNAP dollars, EBT cards, or anybody can buy the meal kit who wants to. And we're just ready to launch that. We don't quite have a name for it yet, so if anybody's got a catchy name, we'd love it. But the University of Minnesota Extension, through its Recipe Box website, is helping us with all the recipes and meal planning. I have a couple of volunteers that I'm going to work with to stuff the bags and keep it going. And we have some funding from Healthy Northland under a community wellness grant to get it launched.
Well, congratulations. You guys have been doing a lot of things. I just want to mention you also have a project for free rides for groceries, and you've also been doing a partnership with a convenience store to get more healthy food in a convenience store so it's more available to people.
Right. We got our first convenience store. That's Brenda's Mini Mart in the senior high-rises in Virginia. And the name of the campaign, it's just part of a statewide effort. And the name of our local campaign is Virginia Digs Vegetables. And the vegetables are in a mining truck. And we thought that that was kind of a fun. I have a friend who's a graphic artist who helped us out with the design on that one. And we're starting to work on our second site, which I can't quite disclose yet, but there will be another Virginia Digs Vegetables convenience store participating, hopefully within the next 6 months.
You also have a meeting coming up this week on Friday, and it is the Northland Food Network. Tell us about that.
Okay. That is a new name for a group of people from all over the Northland who are concerned about action on local food. We're connected by the Minnesota Food Charter, which is kind of a project funded by Blue Cross Blue Shield, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, Department of Health, University of Minnesota Extension, and the General Mills Foundation. And they've published the Minnesota Food Charter, which is a sort of a pathway toward food access, toward healthy, affordable, and safe food for all Minnesotans. So this group on Friday met once before on December 1st, and there were probably 60 people there. They were producers, growers, farmers market managers, farm to school administrators, public health officials. Essentia was there. Essentia has a marvelous effort to try to buy local food for some of its larger institutions. So we had a lot of different parts of the food system there. We had some wonderful brainstorms, and that's what the group is going to work on this Friday. We need more producers. We need better financing for small farms. We need more action on farm-to-school networks. we need people to monitor the farm bill and make sure the legislation is conducive to access for food for people. So I think it's going to be an exciting meeting. It's from noon to 4:30 at Messiah Lutheran Church, and there is a place to sign up on the Rutabaga Project Facebook page if there are interested people who haven't yet signed up.
Right, and then you get a free lunch.
You get a free lunch, that's right. And last time the free lunch was awesome, and I think the free lunch will be very good this time too.
We are speaking with Marlies Riffle from the Rutabaga Project in Virginia. And through all the things you've been telling us, Marlies, you've been talking about all the places you've gone for funding and support for the work you do. And you guys have been living kind of grant to grant, which is difficult. What is the future looking like for the Rutabaga Project?
Oh, that's a good question. We just met this week about that. And we can see that we have enough funding to get through September of this year. And then we don't know what's going to happen. You know, one of the difficulties is that once you get a project established, funders really only want to fund new stuff that you haven't done before. And nobody wants to keep the bones and the structure and the skeleton together. That's such a challenge. I've probably written over 20 grants over the course of the Rutabaga Project. We've been turned down many times, but we've gotten some funding, which is wonderful. But we don't know what we're going to do after that point. Brian Bloom, who's the coordinator, is involved with the Minnesota Food Charter, with the Northland Network. He's involved with all sorts of regional organizations. And we want to keep up that contact because that's what helps us connect to the larger picture and make sure that we're, you know, growing and expanding. So I don't know. Yeah. We are exploring several options, but we don't have answers.
It's always difficult when you're supported by grant funds because, like you said, it's, you know, grant organizations really want to fund new things and sustaining support is harder to find.
It's very hard. So if anybody out there in radio land has an idea, post it on the Rutabaga Project Facebook page.
So can folks still get involved with the Rutabaga Project?
Absolutely. The one way to do that is, and this is a common way that we get in touch with people, is that they post on the Rutabaga Project Facebook page. But they're also welcome to call me personally if they're interested in being involved. That's 218-410-5129. And boy, I can hook you up with stuff to do.
All right. Well, that is Marlies Riffle, Rutabaga Project volunteer. Marlies, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
The Northland Food Network meets this Friday from noon to 4:30 at Messiah Lutheran Church in Mountain Iron. And as Marlies said, sign up by today so they can order a lunch for you. And you can find the link on the Rutabaga Project page on Facebook and at kaxc.org later today.